Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. I do hope you're having a good day. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 53 of the podcast today. Very lucky, very fortunate to have Nanette Fairley. She is a business psychologist. She is a third age planner, and she is the founder of What's Next Ology. Basically, it helps people who are in their third age of their lives. So basically, once you've learned, like once you've gone through your learning stage, and raising kids, or basically doing your career, it's the step after that. Not most really explaining this the most eloquently, but she does a far better job than I. A very interesting podcast. I think it's going to help many people out there who might be looking at what the future might hold for themselves, career-wise, or seeking new purpose on the verge of retirement. But yeah, please sit back, enjoy the podcast. Have a great one. Be awesome, be excellent, be all the positive bees you can be. And hey, don't forget to subscribe. Have a great day. Oh, peace. Oh, yeah. Hello, my friends. Hello, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Day In, Day Out podcast. This is episode 53. Today I have Nanette Fairley on. She is a business psychologist, lifelong learner, and she is the co-founder of What Next Ology. What Next Ology or What Next Ologist? My tongue's not working, but nevertheless, she is the person who can tell you about this more. How are you today, Nanette?
Hi, Miwa. I'm great. Glad to be here, and really excited to have a very energized conversation, I'm sure.
Indeed, indeed. Yes, you are in the land down under, Australia, as we speak. Thank you very much for coming on today. It's in the evening there right now, isn't it?
It is, yep, absolutely. It's just past 6 p.m. in Australia.
Perfect, perfect. So with regards to, people have heard of psychologists, but business psychologists, what's that about?
Good question. When we think of psychologists, we often think of individuals who support through difficult situations. Yeah. So that might be counselling, it could be grief, it could be trauma, it could be divorce, it could be anything. A business psychologist is actually very, very different. We work in businesses, we work in organisations, and we do things like help individuals manage change and transition, which is something that I'm really interested in. And I'll talk about What Next Ology later, which is all about change and transition. Okay. Business psychologists also do testing to help identify the right people for jobs, so psychometric assessment. They can be involved in facilitating major change programs, also cultural change. So think about an organization that has bought another company. And they need to integrate that different culture into the organization. A business psychologist will often work with leaders to facilitate that.
Okay.
Team dynamics, helping a team become a really high performance team. And also thinking about the top talent. So who are the strongest performers in the organization that we really want to make sure that we're supporting and giving them enough challenges so they don't go to another organization. You know, we want to really keep our top talent. So yeah. There's some of the things that a business psychologist does.
Okay, you are going to be a very, very busy person over the next few months. Definitely for the next year or so, because let's just say as we live in planet lockdown, slightly easing up the gears of governments around the world, thank God. But there's huge organizational changes going on globally right now. Things like working from home, which we are, I think this is hyper accelerated everything by about 10 years, sort of like the sort of working from home, work in the office type mentality. I don't know how you see things, how they're going to go over the next like 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, I think people are potentially experiencing a bit of change fatigue right now because it was so fast. Businesses moved almost overnight from working within the office space to working at home. So I think, and then getting used to things like Zoom calls. Working on Zoom, having meeting after meeting on Zoom is a real change for people. And not just learning to use the technology, but the fatigue that comes along with having meeting after meeting on a computer. There are some really different skills that you use, and you're having to be ex much more attentive and connected to make sure that you. Even if you think about when you're in a meeting with someone, you observe body language, you observe eye contact, things like that. Those cues are much harder to get over Zoom, so you need to work much harder to get those to identify those cues and respond to them. Because you're still having to influence people, but over Zoom. You're still having to make decisions, but over Zoom. So or whatever, whether it's Microsoft Teams or whatever package that the organization's using.
Yes, I know, indeed, indeed. Like one of like I've been like because I'm an office, well, when I work, like living the further life, that's another story. But I'm like work in my office when I'm normally working. And like this is the thing, I've been sort of so caught up with like the sort of office realm of things. But like if it was a case of some like I've also worked in an industrial laundrette in my time. So like the whole thing is now I'm just like sort of just now thinking, yeah, there's two sort of like structures now, like well, three people who go into the office still, people who are going to be working from home, and people where like this is no change to them whatsoever. It's like, yeah, what you're doing. And like trying to sort of get that all married together is going to be difficult, I would imagine, for organizations.
Yeah, absolutely. So you think about, some of the roles that you mentioned, like a clean industrial, even like dry cleaners. They are essential services. When you think about a hospital and its need for laundry, etc., that's essential. So those people cannot work from home. They absolutely need to be in their normal place of work with the equipment that they need, etc., etc. But other roles, it's potentially easier to work from home. But some individuals will find that transition and change quite difficult. Think about a real extroverted personality who loves to have a chat at the coffee cooler or the coffee machine or the water cooler, with their work colleagues. If they're at home, particularly if they're single, have no family around, that might be a pretty stressful challenge. One of the things and we can go there later, but I actually left full-time work. I stepped into my third age last year in April, and I started traveling, and I met a number of individuals who call themselves digital nomads. And those individuals have been working independently with just themselves and a computer, perhaps for many years. Some of the women and guys that I met, 8 years, 10 years of working independently, them and their computer. Meeting people as they travel. So I think that some of us who have come out of corporates and are now in this very, it will be perceived by some as a little more isolated because you're working from home. We can learn a lot from digital nomads who've been doing it for a long time. They're used to managing things like, loneliness and how do I keep connection up with people, when it's just me and my computer and the road.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, I think with regards to the sort of digital nomad life, I think with regard like with tools like YouTube, Instagram, and then basically various other tools which are productivity based. I keep seeing adverts for Hello Monday to sort of like do like project management things together to keep an eye on tracks like that. I think, yeah, they are going to be the ones which adjust to this changing world that much easier, because they were pretty much, I would say, 10 years ahead of everyone else. So it's like when you see that change come in, they're like, yeah, makes no difference to my life. It's just now you're on the same page as me. So that is very interesting on that side of things. When, like, this is the thing, I understand digital nomads as people who work more digitally. That could be from YouTube, doing videos, editing like websites and stuff like this. But is there a more broader sort of scope with regards to people who are digital nomads?
I think the other part of it is the nomadic piece. Mm. So they move constantly. They may have a life of travel, yep. Or they just move constantly, and that's something that they want to do. So they're not likely to be working in a corporate office ever. One place. So they might be working from co-working space or a cafe somewhere, or their temporary apartment, wherever they might be. Mm. They land in a new place and they need to make new connections, new friends, etc. Or they retain their old connections digitally. Mm. And when the lockdown first came, there were some articles from digital nomads talking about, here's what I can contribute from how I learned to work more remotely, to work more independently, to not, you know, have my colleagues just across the corridor who I either might want to talk to because I need some connection, or who I get support from when I can't do stuff. Think about all the things that we get support from others in the workplace: connection, technical support, coaching, friendship. Just people to vent to from time to time, people to de-stress with, and suddenly you can't do that anymore. So what can we learn from digital nomads who've found a way of doing some of those things while traveling?
Yeah, no, trust me, I think I'm my girlfriend's wailing wall at times, where she'll come to me and it's like, yeah, and it's like, sometimes there's conversations what go on, and I'm like, I don't know these people, but thank you. But it's like, yeah. But I think she just really misses that sort of chat by the water cooler. Yeah. Grab a cup of tea. Just like, yeah. I think if I let her out, yes. I think if I let her out, she'll just be there.
Sorry. It's really important to kind of achieve work goals, isn't it? Mm. You know, making connection with someone over the water cooler, having lunch with someone, you know, maybe they'll help us achieve a goal or a project, or we'll be able to influence them more easily because we've struck a really good relationship with that person. Yeah. A little bit more difficult if you haven't had that opportunity because you're working, you know, remotely. It's not as easy just to run into someone and have an interesting corridor conversation.
Yeah, no, this, like, yeah, sort of touching back on the point you mentioned about people who are high performance currently. It'll be interesting to see if they still continue being those high performers, or if like someone else rises up from that, because it's totally different environment. So some people who thrived before, will they thrive continually, or will that be someone else?
It's an excellent point, Miwa. Excellent point. Because I think that you have a skill set. Our top performers are usually pretty good at, not always, I don't want to generalize, but pretty good at developing, pivoting, changing as they need to, because that's part of, continuing to be considered a top talent in an organization. You know, they are able to identify trends that are coming and then respond to those trends. How do we differentiate our top talent? There's a number of different things, but that ability to stay curious and also be able to change, develop new skills quickly when required, or change tack to achieve something a different way because the first way was blocked or the first way wasn't appropriate. So I 100% agree with you that we will see some potentially different top performers rising because they're a different skill set, a slightly different skill set will be needed to succeed in these days.
Yeah, no, like this is a thing. I think with regards to Zoom, like doing Zoom calls and stuff like this, I think that interaction over Zoom or Teams or basically whatever other third party like product, what will be used for that, it's going to be like, I think it's going to like, for some people, that might be that sort of little bit extra resistance, what can sometimes put them off. Because, like, yeah, I sit in front of a camera, talk to a number of different people, and I've become very comfortable with that. But that's, like, down to sort of my choice and making me get out into, like, out of my comfort space. I know there's going to be some people which will sit in the sort of back of the meeting and, like, they'll go to someone privately and then they'll make some excellent points, but they might not be the person raising their hand in that meeting. And in Zoom or Teams, you can't hide. There is no hiding space at all. You're there and everyone can see you as soon as you make it any sort of gesture or movement out of the ordinary.
Absolutely. But think about how much better your facilitation skills need to be if you're facilitating a Zoom meeting with a number of people. Because you do need to make sure that you've included everyone and everyone's had the opportunity to speak, that they aren't put on the spot if they're more introverted, that but you've maybe given them a little bit of warm-up time to contribute. I think your skills as a facilitator will need to be honed quite a bit to run very successful Zoom meetings. So I'm sure that those who are moved from face-to-face meetings to Zoom meetings have been developing quite a few skills of late.
Yes, I do not envy any team leader or facilitator out there whatsoever, because oh my, it's like, hey, you remember this? It's like, okay, where is my team?
Yeah, and keeping a team motivated remotely. You know, as a team leader, you're still responsible for motivating. Well, you know, there's a lot of debate about who's responsible for an individual's motivation. An individual is often responsible for their own motivation. However, the team leader is responsible for creating the environment for that to thrive. And again, a bit more challenging when you're remote.
Oh, yeah, no, like this is the thing. With regards to like the whole sort of team leader type thing, it depends on what the activity you're doing. Business, I'd say you can have two types of leaders, one who leads from the front, one who like sort of like pushes. And there might be another one, but I'm not like I've seen these two types more so. Like when you sort of get more into a sort of team setting, and if you look at any sort of like basketball, football team or like rugby team, which everyone's like on that team's been great. There's all like, forget the manager or the coach. There's always a member on that amongst the players who has been, they'll say tyrant, their team members and stuff like this, but it's been, they're being that force to get that extra 20% out of someone, like 30% to make them champions. So it's like very, it's a very hard thing to sort of narrow down sometimes. Like,
yeah, I love the sport analogy. There's so much we can learn from sport with respect to leadership. There's a book I read several years ago called Legends, and it was about the New Zealand All Blacks rugby team.
Yes.
And they you know them? You know
well, yes. Them? Oh, well, like this is the thing. I think anyone who's seen rugby union knows of them. And there's like this, I don't know, this slight speck of hatred. No, that might be going a little bit far for me. But like, there's this speck of envy gnawing away just all the time, gnawing. You're like, yeah. Like for you guys, like Australian, right? Yeah, there must be hatred there.
Well, Let's say quite a lot of rivalry. Let's say, let's leave it at that, rivalry.
Right.
But
rivalry.
There was a time that the All Blacks weren't a fantastic team, and that's when they lost the World Cup to South Africa. And it was a huge wake up call for them and their leadership. So this book is about their comeback, how they diagnosed what was wrong with the team, what wasn't working, how they developed stronger leadership, and then how they came back to, of course, become a force to be reckoned with. But it is, there's so much we can learn from sports about great leadership and that kind of facilitative, quiet, sometimes quiet leadership. It's just someone who's incredibly influential in a team. They're not the authoritarian leader. They're not the loudest person in the team, but they're a force that kind of motivates, and they're almost the quiet cheer squad in the team. I love those kind of leaders, and we have a lot of sporting leaders that are like that.
Yes. Like, this is the thing. Like being in Australia, yeah. Like, let's just say sport is definitely a thing for you guys to a high order. Like, yeah, I think there was many a tear which was shed when, like, you heard like by many of the country, when you heard live sports was like going bye-bye for the lockdown. Trust me, like, yeah, it was, people in the UK were quite distraught, myself as well. But yeah, but it's coming back slowly but surely, thankfully. But yeah, I can imagine. You mentioned third age, a little bit earlier in the conversation. What is the third age?
Yeah, it's a great question. So there's a British sociologist and historian called Peter Lazarus, and okay, he came up with this model, stages of life. First stage, education. Second stage, work. Mm-hmm. And then he only had one more stage, which was death. But he then edited the model. He edited it because we're starting to live longer. So we don't finish work and then die.
Yeah.
We actually have this significant period, if we're privileged enough to, between finishing work and later in life when we no longer can do things. So he added something called the third age. Mm. So there's the first age, education. Second age is work. Third age is that flexible time post full-time employment, where you're still healthy and curious and active, where you have perhaps the most flexibility you've ever had in your life. And then, of course, the fourth age, and he describes the fourth age as decrepitude, which I'm, you know, I guess we're all going to go there. But
yes. He's definitely one for dinner conversation.
I know. I had this vision that I wanted to start my third age before I was in my late 60s, because a lot of people retire. Well, the legal retirement age in Australia is 67, and it's getting higher in many countries. And one of the reasons for that is we're living longer and we are healthier longer. And there's this fabulous book written again by two Brits. Andrew Scott, who's a London Business School economist, and Linda Grattan, who's a London Business School psychologist. And they wrote this book. It was a real catalyst for me in my thinking around change and transition. It's called The 100-Year Life. And they talk about how the fact that we're all living longer, what impact will that have on governments and what should they be doing? Organizations and what should they be doing, and the individual. And so I kind of picked that up because I was really interested on the impact on the individual, and that point of your life, your third age, what happens after you leave full-time employment. And for some people that could be 30 years. In the past, people retired and maybe they had 5 years, maybe they had 10 years. But today, with medical care and how we're all taking, or many of us are taking better care of ourselves, we can have maybe 30 years post ending a full-time employment.
Yeah, no. that is a healthy lifetime right there, you know? Like, this is a thing. 30 years. You can do a lot in 30 years. A lot.
You can.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I moved to where I am now, because we plan for our first child, we plan for our wedding, we plan for our first child, we plan for our holidays, but you know, a lot of people don't plan for their third age. They might think about their finances a bit, but they don't think about the rest of it. And there's so much that you can do in the lead up to leaving full-time employment, and once you're in your third age, I hate the word retirement. It sounds so old.
No, it's like, when, like, the whole thing is, like, sort of tying in, when you say retirement, that's like, I'm done. But you're not done. You're still living life. It's like, okay, if it was like retirement and like you leave the office and then someone like goes, okay, now we're going to take care of you in this center. And yes, your loved ones can collect remains afterward. Yeah, then you're done. That's it. But yeah, when you retire, you're not really done. You're just, there is still lots of things to do. There's like, if you're not working, I would say finding a purpose is one of the hardest things to do, because so much identity is tied up in so many people's, like, how they're seen in work or what they've been doing for the community. But you still can do stuff. You can still,
like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's so much research, Miwa, into it. So there's a lot of longitudinal studies. There's a great one that's come out of Ireland. Mm. It's called the Irish Longitudinal Study into Aging. And there's a number around the world. And so what we did is we distilled them all down. What are those research and longitudinal studies, what are they finding about what we should all be thinking about so that we make the most of that period of our life, our third age, and that we extend it as much as we can. So we put together we did the research, we understood what all of these major studies are telling us, and then we put it together into a questionnaire, which is a free questionnaire on our website. So people can, if they're thinking about what they want to do now as they start planning for their third age, or they're in their third age and they're not enjoying it, what can they do? And there's a whole raft of things. So we from the research, we created a model, and we help people think about how they are against each of the criteria or factors on that model. And from that, helping people put together a plan for their third age. So, and the very first thing is exactly what you just said, Miwa, is purpose. So what will get you out of bed in the morning in your third age when you're not going into the office every day? What will give you your sense of identity, your sense of purpose, your sense that you've got still some goals to kick?
Yeah.
And that's a critically important starting point. So good point.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. If you're looking for people. No. So, you mentioned that, yes, you wanted to start before the decrepit. I don't know why you called it. But it's like, but like, yeah, you made your change to do your third age. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. So what sort of was that sort of spark which went, that's it, I'm moving, I'm changing? That, and yeah, how did you initiate?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I'm not an impulsive person.
Okay.
So I actually put quite a bit of planning into it. So at the time, when I first started planning, which was about 4 years before I actually left full-time employment, at that time, I had set up a business. And I'd been running the business for about 16 years. And then I also got this fabulous job in a big corporate. It was like my dream job. So I found a wonderful, wonderful woman who ran my business, and I went back into corporate life because I had been running my business for many years.
Okay, yeah.
And I think I wanted a change. You know, I think I wanted a new challenge. And this job was, well, it was my dream job. So I did that for a number of years, and then, but I knew I didn't want to do it until I was 65 for a lot of reasons. It was super busy, wonderfully challenging to work in talent management and cultural change and team development, you know, wonderfully, wonderfully challenging leadership development, wonderful role. But I didn't want to risk, you know, challenge my health. I didn't want to get to 65 and not really seen anything, just had worked and worked and worked. And the years that I ran my business, really it's a 7-day week job. So I got to the point where I thought, I don't want to do this forever because I will be the most boring person when I finally do get.
I don't think that's true. No. I don't. Like, I think you could work 7 days, 8 days a week. I don't think you'll be the most boring person. I think, yeah, like just beneath the surface. Yeah. No.
There was so many other things I had on my to-do list. You know, Miwa.
Yeah.
I had this opportunity to sell the business, and so I that was like an 18-month project, and so that happened. And then I put a date, an end date, on my corporate role, and then I resigned. And my last day was something like the 10th of April 2019. So the first, you know, the plan was twofold. It was, well, a couple of things. I wanted to travel, but I wanted to travel slowly. The travel that I'd done in the past was business travel. You go to the airport, you're on an airplane, which sounds very foreign now, be on an airplane to go somewhere between.
Yeah.
That's weird, huh?
It's like you flew? Yes. Back in the day, we used to fly to countries. You'd step out in the airport and they'll let you out into the summer.
Yeah, no quarantine then. So you'd fly off somewhere, you'd have a meeting, you'd fly back. And that kind of travel, you don't get an opportunity to experience the culture, to meet the people, to eat the food, to drink the wine. You just don't get that experience.
No, I know that well.
So my plan was to, yeah.
Yeah, no, I did. I traveled for work like ages ago where I was like traveling around the whole of Europe, but I called it rock star traveling. With Rockstar traveling, you get out of the airport, you either go to your meeting, you go to the hotel, go to your meeting, then come back from your meeting, then you go to the airport, you're back in the office, and you repeat that process. Rockstar traveling.
Absolutely. So you and I, we've done lots of rockstar traveling.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, it gets to a point where you're like, you know, people go, oh, have you been here? Have you been there? And you're like, I have, but I can't tell you one thing about it except, oh, there was a nice store in the airport. Or I really liked the restaurant in that hotel. But that was it. So my plan was, so when I started my third age, my plan was to travel. It was to do some learning that I had on my list for a long time, but I didn't get a chance. I wanted to learn a language.
Okay.
I started studying Spanish. I'm absolutely rubbish at it, but I will keep going. I've only been at it for less than a year.
Okay.
It's my first language.
Yeah.
The first language that I've studied beyond English.
Yeah.
So the travel, the language. I really wanted to learn a bit more about wine. So I actually came to London and I did my WSET level 1 and level 2.
What
there's
is
many
that?
More levels. Wines and Spirits Education Trust of the UK, and they do qualifications. I think the top level qualifies you to be a sommelier.
Nice.
I'm not interested in getting that high because, oh my gosh, I think I would have to study for about 5 years. But I was just interested in knowing more, you know. So I did my level one and level two, and I'd like to do level three sometime in the future, but it's about 6 months of study. So I'll leave that for a little while. And then the next thing was I wanted to take this idea about helping people manage the transition to their third age better. And setting up something that would help people, you know, providing that, using my skills as a psychologist who's worked in supporting people through change and transition, and so that's where What Nextology was born, that concept. So it, part of my third age plan, and I have two co-founders in the business as well.
Ah, superb, superb. Like, this is the thing, like, when you go, yeah, I changed, like, and you don't do it quickly, 4 years in the planning, and like, that is, yeah, quite epic, because I know there are many people would not give 4 years for about changing their life. They're just like, I'm going to change my life. And it must, like, for them, I find it must have been quite hard to find the right direction. Did you have a sort of, like you mentioned, you wanted to travel more and study a language, like was What's Next ology, did that just come out randomly, or was that planned as well?
It was fairly planned, because I probably read the catalyst for it was when I read that book, The 100-Year Life, and that was probably about 4 or 5 years ago. Probably 5 years ago I read it. I was also, because I was working with a lot of senior managers in either the clients of my business or in the corporate that I was in, I had lots of conversations with individuals who were close to retirement about what they were planning for their retirement, because I was super interested. And also I was super interested that many of them didn't have much of a plan. It might've been to play golf. but you and I know that if you play golf every day for 6 months, you're probably going to get fairly bored if your life is that one dimensional.
I agree. I think one of the things with the lockdown, and if anyone's been furloughed, I think they sort of get a very sort of crystal clear of like, okay, I've watched all these box sets, I've done all of this. And like, pretty soon, if it's been a month, you're like, what do I do now? It's like, sleep a little bit later, like not getting active. And then all of a sudden, I think here in the UK, it was like week 3 to 4 when there was this sort of explosion of people going out running, when, like, you know what I mean, early in the morning and stuff like this. We were locked down, but they would like do a quick run for their hour of exercise a day. Like, let's just say prisoners have more exercise than we, like, more exercise than we did on lockdown. But that's another story. But that sort of, I think that's given some people a lot of insight in regards to, if you had all the time in the world, how do you fill it?
And absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that needs some planning. It needs some thought. Mm. And for people who, you know, I feel most for people who are in their late 50s and 60s and who have been made redundant through COVID, because they thought probably that they would be working for some more years and they would have more time to both save for it, but also maybe to think about what they will do in that time. So if you're retired or made redundant early, and your chances, because let's face it, older workers are going to have a less chance of being re-employed. If you're 63 and you want to work for 3 or 4 more years, that's going to be pretty hard to get a full-time corporate job. There's lots of other things people can do. And one of the things that we're doing at What Nextology right now is we've almost finished it, put together a course for people who that has happened to. So basically you don't have a full-time job right now. What are all the things you can do, both thinking about your finances, but also thinking about how can you generate income through something like a portfolio career. So you don't need to look for that one job. You might have a couple of quarter-time jobs, or you might have something that you're very passionate about that you can turn into a small business.
Okay.
So helping people think through what you can do, being that your plans to work full-time may have been interrupted because of COVID.
This is one of the things I think is going to come out after we go through our global recession, which is coming, like a freight train, unfortunately. But the thing about after recessions is an excellent time for growth and expansion. I think there's going to be a number of cottage industries like popping up throughout the world, where people are going to do like stuff more like this. Well, I don't think that it's going to be a case of they're going into their third age. I think it's going to be a case of quite a broad spectrum of people, which will take up a number of different jobs or start a number of different side hustles to sort of like go, you know what I was doing in the corporate world, I liked it, but it wasn't like the most fulfilling, or yeah, that's gone away. And yeah, I need to make sure I've got an income coming from here and here. And so if I do have a job, that will see me through the rough times. And yeah, I admit that challenge is going to be different for people who are entering their third age or looking at their third age on the horizon, because yeah, it's not going to be the easiest, but I think this, it will still be bright after a year or so. So
I think it's about also using your creativity, it doesn't matter how old you are, to identify what are the opportunities out there. And I'll give you two examples. One of the women that I know through some of the digital nomad girls that I've met, she set up a business to help you facilitate fun events like a birthday party or a 50th or whatever online.
Yeah.
So if you can't get together because you can't fly for somebody's 50th wedding anniversary or whatever, she set up a business to help you facilitate the best event, albeit through an online method. So that's one idea. Yeah. Another thing that I've seen that I thought was really innovative as far as a pivot in this time, there's an organization here in Australia called Stage Kings, and they used to build big sets for musicals and events. So overnight, of course, their business just died. They had no business. They went from 100 to zero. What they did is they came up with the idea, everyone's working from home, they need work from home furniture that's easy to put together, that doesn't need screwdrivers or anything, comes really quickly, they can put it together in 2 minutes, whether it be a stand-up desk or whether it be a little desk or whether it be something to prop your laptop on while you're doing a Zoom meeting.
Yeah.
And they've come up with 30 different items. And now they've employed like 50 more people than they had in the first place. So, you know, as you said, with change comes opportunity, but with growth also comes opportunity. So I think those who are in their third age, I would say don't lose hope, because you have some skills that even if you have lost your job through this this period, you have skills that you can repurpose, and perhaps you have some creative ideas or you've seen a need in your community and you can fill that need. So I do think there are going to be opportunities for people to have either a portfolio career, a couple of quarter-time jobs or part-time roles, or to set up a small business in a passion area or in an area that they've seen there's a need.
Oh, no, outstanding. One of the things I find interesting when you did you went from business owner to working corporate, and that's one of the things where if you start your own business, doing the whole 7 times a week, passion, it's like, yeah, all that drive then to like go to the corporate world, you don't really hear that sort of step from many a person who's like, I'm this is me, And then, like, to step back when everything's still perfectly fine and go, you know what? I need a change. I find that very interesting. Very interesting indeed.
Wait, are you saying I'm strange, Miwa?
No, I'm not saying you're strange. I would say this is the thing. I would say I'm going to go with brave, because like the whole thing is, you know the world one way and you fought tooth and nail to get into the world that way. And then to all of a sudden to go, okay, you look, this job came up and you like go, okay, to leave everything you know and understand what is up, what is down, this is left, this is right. So all of a sudden to go, okay, I'm going to do this corporate world. And then like, I'm going to leave my baby with someone else to run that. Like, it's a case of like, so you got a new up and down, you got a new left and right, and then you got to trust this person as much as you vetted them. Like, they could be like your lifelong friend. You're like going, how can I really trust them with my baby? Like, so this is the reason why I find it interesting you did that.
Yeah. And I agree with you. The first, I have to say, the first year of stepping out of the business, it was like my I'd left my baby somewhere. It really was. but a couple of things. First of all, why did I do it? So I'd been running the business for about 16 or 17 years at that point. And I think I got to the point two ways. First of all, I think it needed a different level of commercial acumen than I have. I'm an occupational psychologist, a business psychologist. I love the technical side of my job. And the business had grown to a point where I thought it really needed a commercial person. And I did recruit a much more commercially astute person than me. And she really took the business to another height. So that was one reason. The second reason, I kind of, we had a core business. So the business had three different divisions and we'd been doing that for the whole, you know, three, kind of 16, 17 years, those three divisions. And I felt like I wanted a change. I wanted a new challenge. It was the whole cycle, you know, prospect for work, pitch, write a proposal, support the team that are delivering it, do the billing. I mean, I didn't do any of that. I was overseeing it, but it felt that I needed a bit of a new challenge, more variety. And this opportunity came along in a great organization, and the job was, I could have written the job description myself, and it got me excited again. You know, I really, it was different. Although I loved business, it kind of was almost a little stale for me. I think I needed a new challenge. So yeah, I went back to the big corporate. I was involved in the business still quite a lot. So I chaired leadership meetings for the first kind of 6 months, in an evening. The person that I recruited wasn't a psychologist, so she had quite a lot to learn about the content of the business, but she brought so much from a commercial and a strategic perspective that we were a great balance for each other as well.
Okay. Oh, that's great. So what, like, you were completely hands off when you were like moved over to corporate, or were you just like every now and then a gentle hand on the tiller?
Yeah. For the first year, I was probably, well, so the first 6 months I was probably there once a week, just for one meeting in an evening or on a weekend. And then after that, it was once a month.
Okay. Yeah.
Of course, I was on call. I was on email call. I was on phone call. I was very close to the finances. I would be speaking with the finance director of the business quite regularly just to make sure that, you know, there was no drastic changes. But, you know, I found a real gem, I think, and who was demonstrating good business growth. And the team, you know, loved her. So, you know, my baby was out in the world.
Ah, superb. No, like, as I say, brave, like, because, yeah, I'm going to say it again. Yeah, very brave of you. Takes courage to do that. Basically, to look at oneself, be aware to, like, you have grown to a certain point and you want it to grow more, moving yourself into that place of discomfort. Yeah, not many people would. And I think not many people would take the action to do it, because it's a case of, it's all fine and good to say it, but it's another thing to actually act upon those words and do it, I find. But, you know, I've got, as I say, not a boring person.
Thank you. But as I said, I encourage everyone to do think about before you make those big changes. I'm not impulsive. So there was planning. You know, I had to think about my finances. I had to think about what I did with different things. Mm. Would I ever regret stepping out of this job? I had to really do a lot of soul searching. I also had committed to complete some projects in the role, so yeah. I needed to get those done. So I would say, there's a time for impulsivity, but throwing in a perfectly good full-time job that was a career that was something that I enjoyed is not a time to be impulsive.
absolutely. So this must have happened fairly quickly, for seeing the job to get it, like finding the right person to step in and then basically start your new job. What time frame was that? Because
it took me about 4 or 5 months, because it was a senior role, so those roles take a while to recruit. But I was really lucky to find the woman who came in to be the CEO of my business. She walked into my office one day. She was new. This business was in Dubai in the United Arab Emirates, because I've been an expat for a number of years. And she's British, and she was new to Dubai, and she just walked into my office because she'd heard on the grapevine that I was someone that she needed to meet. So she reached out, and in my network, somebody had obviously told her that she should come and talk to me just about opportunities, and we really connected. I didn't even know that there was an opportunity in my business at that time, but very quickly on the heels of that, along came the corporate role, and we started talking about her coming into the business. And I worked with her only for maybe a month full time.
Yeah.
And then moved into my corporate role. And but we stayed in touch daily initially, and then weekly. And then it was monthly as we got comfortable with each other.
Superb. Like, I've got to say, so doing that in that sort of short time frame, very impressive. What to say? Very impressive. So I take it the role was in Dubai as well, or was that in Australia?
It was. Yeah, it was in Dubai. Yeah, so it was very close. My CEO and I could have regular phone calls in the evenings, and if I needed to support her on anything initially, it was easy. Because we weren't on different countries, we weren't on different time zones. But as I said, she was the right person for the job. So I probably hung on for a bit longer than I needed to. It was my baby. It was a little scary, I have to say. You talk about me being brave. There was a couple of times when I asked myself, am I doing the right thing? You second guess your big decisions sometimes, and I certainly did that, but I was really lucky it worked out well.
My So so what was it like being an expat in the UAE, excuse me?
Mm-hmm. I spent a fair few years there, so it's a very familiar place to me. It gave me great opportunities both to set up the business but also to work in a great organization. I really enjoyed it. There's people say good things and bad things about Dubai and the UAE. But for me, it gave me good opportunities. I made some great friends there. And but for now, because I started traveling last year when I left the corporate role, I was actually in South America when COVID hit. So I decided to come home to Australia because my parents are older and I wanted to make sure that they were okay through COVID. My brothers are both doctors, so they are in the hospitals working and they can't really come visit my parents because of the risk of
None.
infection.
Yeah.
I thought that, I had the most flexible life, so I needed to lock down somewhere, and luckily Australia would still let me in.
I think when you just flew in, that was it. Like basically, Australia, New Zealand went, you know what? No, to the rest of the world. It's like, we'd like to come over and visit. We'd like to stay there. No, if you don't have an Australian or New Zealand passport, go away. Just keep looking.
Even, I have an Australian passport. I still had to do 2 weeks of quarantine when I arrived in the middle of March. So, but that's good. I'm very happy to be here. I'm glad that Australia are doing what they're doing because we're doing okay at the moment. But everyone says, what's going to happen when we open our international borders? So I guess we wait and see, huh?
I think everyone's asking what the new normal is going to be. Is it going to be the same? If it's going to be different? It's like it you got to roll the dice, see what happens, and like fingers crossed it comes out in the most positive outcomes. But with measures which have been put in place from a number of different governments, hopefully it will be better. It'll come out a lot better than expected. So or I'll just simply say, no offense to anyone who might be living in Brazil, but don't go there. Don't go there right now because their infection rate is way out because the government is
Very
not
high.
paying attention to what they're doing. Like the president of Brazil is like, nah. Corona, it doesn't exist. It's like, oh, you mean this thing which has shut down the whole planet's whole economic system for the last.
Sounds like another president that we know of as well has been saying similar things.
Look, all I've got to say, I don't believe in orange people. That's what I've got to say. It's like,
Yeah, but I was lucky I could get out of South America. So basically, I was overlanding. So I had to leave my car in storage. I had a four-wheel drive, and I was charging from Argentina to Bolivia, and then I just turned around and parked the car in the capital and flew home. It was a good decision.
Yes, put it this way. Being stuck in South America, through lockdown, planet lockdown. I would imagine it's not going to be the easiest time if you've got no sort of real base there in the first place. So will you be when lockdown is over and things are a little bit more normal, will you be returning to South America or do you have other destinations on your horizon, say?
I would love to go back to South America because I was loving it. I'd done 5 months overlanding. I'd driven 8,500 kilometers to Chile and seen a lot of Chile and Argentina. But I actually don't think that's going to be top of my list because I think particularly Brazil is struggling more so with COVID. So I think my next destination will be Europe. One of the things I've always wanted to do is cycle the Camino, either the Portuguese Camino or French. So maybe I'll go into Europe next. But I can't see that realistically happening until kind of early next year. But let's see. I don't. My crystal ball is broken at the moment, Miwa.
Well, yes, I think everyone's crystal ball, if you shook it and it came up with an answer, it would be like, to be determined. Come back to me. Just like, maybe not. It's like 2023, no. But yeah.
Absolutely. You know, but it's given me, you know, great opportunity, one, to reconnect with my family, which has been fabulous, but also to work on what nextology. So to really think about, you know, how we're, and to begin to grow the community. So we have a really active Facebook community, which is starting to grow, which is fabulous. We've developed a couple of courses that really help. The first course really helps people think about their plan for their third age. You know, we talked before about the need for a plan. And the second course is, as I mentioned before, about, you know, if this COVID thing has given you a bit of a kick in the butt as an older person, what are some of the things that you can think about from a financial perspective and an income perspective? So that's been a good thing, being locked down in Australia, because I've had great internet connection. Mm-hmm. I've had time to work on it. And, you know, in between, I spend time with my parents and that's been great.
Oh, superb. Will you be, like, I don't know, have you already come up with a podcast for, like, What's an Ecology? Or is it a case of you're thinking about it right now?
Well, we haven't gone there yet. And I'm actually, this has been fun working with you today, because I'm watching what you're doing and learning from an experienced podcaster.
Experienced podcaster?
Absolutely.
Where is this person?
Absolutely. but for now, what we're working on the Facebook community, and keep making that pretty active and a bright place to be. And we are setting up a YouTube channel, because we're doing a lot of interviews of people who are doing interesting things in their third age. So whenever I meet someone, and when my co-founders meet someone who has got a plan for their third age or is doing something interesting in their third age, we try and interview them, because these stories will be inspirational for others who perhaps haven't found their identity yet or haven't found their purpose yet in their third age. So I think a YouTube channel will be first. Podcast somewhere down the track.
Yeah. And how long have the interviews been? Have they been 10 minutes, 20 minutes? How long?
Yep, good question. So we would love them to go longer, but at the moment we have two different types of interviews. The first one, which we call Stories on Saturday, and we put those in the Facebook community, and they're kind of 5 to 7, 5 to 8 minutes. Okay. And their stories, people telling their stories. And then we have, which will go on our YouTube channel, the expert series, where we're interviewing people who are so for example, I interviewed a woman who runs a solo travel company for older people. And they share their expertise, and those ones go for an hour. So 45 minutes an hour. So we have, I think it's more difficult to upload a very long video into Facebook, because I'm not sure when we're scrolling Facebook that we want to watch a long video. But if we go to YouTube, I'd appreciate your advice on that, Miwa. Is it okay to ask for your advice?
No, certainly. Like, this is like, there are things I need to do for my podcast, and like with regards to my YouTube channel, which small, but everything's growing. When you mentioned the 5-6 minute segments, if you put them up on Facebook, Instagram, because more and more the demographic of Instagram has shifted from what it once was to basically the same thing as Facebook. So it's like, a very broad range of people on there. And I think if you put it on Instagram TV as well as Facebook, that would work nicely. With your long form videos, you can just simply convert them, rip the audio, and you can put them up as your sort of podcast episodes from there. So you have another way of doing it. It comes down to what you want to make grow faster, if you get what I mean. Mm-hmm. So if it's about YouTube, then you put a lot of your time and energy there. But YouTube is a very, very noisy place. There is I can't even tell you how many channels there are, but it's well over 100 million compared to podcasts, which is now sort of breaking 1 million, maybe 1.5 million, 2 million at most. But there's less noise there. So I would say upload it on both. Put your this is something I need to do for my long form videos. Is like, and the I use this. I observe there's a guy, Joe Rogan. You might know him. You might not.
I've heard of him. Yep.
Yeah, he is like the king of podcasts at this present time. Had a recent $100 million deal. For he's done 1,492 or 93 episodes, but he has his long form content. But what he does with the long form content, he'll pick out key pieces out of that, and he sets up a clip channel. So with that, you've got clips which you can then link to your YouTube channel or your podcast, and it's just a sort of a gateway into getting people to consume it all. So plus if you want to, you can then upload more content up on your Facebook platform, your Instagram, TikTok is a bit like the Wild West at this present time. It's becoming more civilized, and it definitely skews younger, but those youngsters will grow up, and those youngsters do have the ears of their parents. So it's still an avenue, but I don't know if you want to go there, because it's most if you're doing video, it's 60 seconds on TikTok. Whereas Instagram Live, I believe if you're doing a live thing on Instagram, I think you can go up to half an hour, maybe an hour on that. Just trying to think one more. And then, other platforms, you've got other things. But what I would also say is if you can get into the sort of live, doing something live on a regular basis, I think you made mention of that on Facebook, you do lives, is that correct?
We do lives about once a week. We need to do more, probably. Couple of minutes, 2-3 minutes.
If you say do a 15-minute briefing, every Monday to Friday, when you can fit it in, but at the same time, that'll help basically build your sort of live portfolio, and then you can look to doing it on LinkedIn. And the reason why I say that, LinkedIn I'm just going off what I can remember reading of the sort of criteria to get to permissions to do live. You've got to prove you've done live on other platforms before they actually let you get live.
That's a good tip.
Yeah. So yeah, I would say use Facebook Live as a gateway to LinkedIn Live, because that's, I would say, where would be a real good little gold mine for you. Yeah. And putting up as well up on LinkedIn with regards to that as well, to get people on to your long form content, your YouTube channel, your podcast. And I would say definitely anything long form you've got, if you've got it, if you can do it consistently once a week, just take the audio, put it up there, and you have yourself a podcast, and then you still got yourself a video as well. So it's about upping how much content you can get out there.
That's really, really, really good tips. Can I just ask you, when you said Facebook Lives, our Facebook group, we've got almost 150 people. We only started it 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, that's great.
If you were going to do a live every once a week, would you do that on your Facebook page? Because that's not a closed group. You don't have to have people to join the group to be able to see it. Would you do it on your Facebook page?
You can do it on your Facebook page. This is the thing. Then you basically, anyone can join it. I'm saying this is rough. I know, yeah, you can do it on your Facebook page. Anyone most probably can join it if they can see it. But yeah, it comes down to you. If your group is public or private, it's up, like, definitely your members will be able to see it. But with the thing with live, it is a little bit more of a challenge because you got to try captivating that audience while it's actually going on, if you get what I mean. And like sort of getting to come back time and time again can be difficult. There's a guy who I believe his name's Pat Flynn.
I listened to Pat Flynn. Yeah, I listened to
Okay,
him.
yeah, he's like his YouTube, well, his live channel, which he calls the Income Stream. He has been actually every day from lockdown, so he's on episode 100. He has been going live just like every day, every day, every day, and like he does it at the same time. But it's a case of that hour he gives, that 2 hours, and like look, it's really sort of led to some considerable growth because people see him coming on, and you like go, oh. What's in a live stream? When you're talking, you're getting 1,000 people coming on, interacting with that, like with that. When you've got so much else going on, yeah, that's damn decent. That works
Yeah,
out quite nicely.
that's
And
amazing. That's
yeah.
great.
And then after that, people can still watch that live stream as a regular YouTube video as well. So it's about more content, more quality information, and more opportunity and chances for people to find you. And this is, as I say, I need to do a clip like channel for myself. It just means I'm gonna have to sit down. And one of the things I don't like hearing on when it's recorded is my own voice. So there you go. So yeah.
Well, one of the things I prefer recording over live is I get the chance to edit it. So if I've stumbled or whatever, I can edit it out, which is a nice thing. I guess you're going to edit all of this out.
No, like when I record it, like not unless if there's a huge mistake or there's like a sort of like the video freezes and then like I come back and like there's a real sort of obvious gap. That's when I might edit it, but I just keep it as it is. I keep it like if I've made a mistake, it's there for the world to see. If a mistake's been done, so it just goes out raw. And like this is the thing, I'm kind of yeah. So it's like my stepping stone if I
Well,
want.
thank you for taking the time on your podcast to give me some great advice. I'm very thankful.
No, like this is the whole thing. It's like it's I like I will offer out help if I can. And like this is the thing. I have got a lot of things to learn. And I say anything I say, please double check it. Triple check it because like I might be wrong about some things. I'm not saying I'm this all-knowing guru because no, I've got a lot to learn along the way. So yeah, but if I can help, I'll definitely offer that help out to people to like help them grow as well. It look, we live on a world with about 7 billion people and rising. Look, there is enough cake out there for everyone to have a nice day with it, to have a nice little party. So yeah, if I can, I will.
Fantastic. Great. Thanks again. I appreciate that.
No problem, no problem. Hey, if you've got any more questions, I'd be happy to answer them. But yeah, but I think you'll be absolutely fine though. I think so, yeah. So yeah.
Yeah. But the goal is really to find the audience because there are people, and there was a recent study done. It was really interesting. It's just been released. An Australian researcher, psychologist, he did a big study in the UK and the US. And things like we talked about finding your identity, but one of the big challenges of your third age, because you're no longer in work with colleagues, is loneliness. And this piece of research showed that, it is as risky to be lonely as it is to be obese, to have excessive alcohol consumption, and also to lack in exercise. So, our goal with What Nextology really is just to find those people that need the support, that need a community, because we provide a community that needs support with a plan for their third age. And so your tips on how I can reach them, how we can reach them better, I'm very grateful for the conversation we just had. So thank you.
No problem. And like this is the thing, reaching that community, I think there's going to be a lot more people thinking about what's the next step, just because the lockdown, even if there wasn't a recession on the horizon, the lockdown alone is going to make people go, is this what I really want to do? Is there more out there I could be doing? Is there a greater purpose for me to do something? And I think there are going to be many people who are going to be I need to do something more. I need to push myself more. I need to get out of my place of comfort and see where I can take myself in the world. And some of it will be well planned out and it'll be executed. There's a fine piece of art, and some of it is going to be chaotic, nasty, and it's just going to be had to come out of the realm of necessity or else. And I think the example of the third age champion is Colonel Sanders. At the age of 67, the guy went out and he created Kentucky Fried Chicken, one of the world's largest franchises. So you know what I mean. So, and that was
a great example.
Yeah.
A great example. Yeah, really good example. And there's so much ageism that older people are told that, what, you want to start a business? You're whatever age you are, you want to start a business? And I would say, why not? Whatever is next for you, as long as you've done the thinking, the research, and you're in a situation, a position to be able to do it, why not? We need to challenge those ageist stereotypes.
Yeah, but this is the thing. The government knows how much. This is the thing. Employers might not see the value of older people in society, but I should say, the corporate world doesn't see the value in older people. The government, they do, because if they tend to mess with budgets, groups, the elder groups in society, they know they're in for a dogfight. Because one thing older people have over younger people is that experience and that wealth of experience and knowledge, what comes with time and different organizations, and you give people time to go, oh, you want to mess with us here? Okay, we can galvanize, we can build a movement, and yes, we know all the little tricks you're gonna pull to do that over a young group which has no clue. And I think they if you got old and young to work together, I think the world would be so much more of a richer and more fulfilled place, because understand the balance and use that energy to make something great happen. But it's just two people talking on a Zoom call at this present time. Who knows if this will lead to change in the world.
Yeah, and there are some good initiatives around that intergenerational learning. Mm. So, for example, when country-based students come to a city to go to university, there are some organisations that help place them with older people who might be living alone and may need a little bit of company or support from time to time. So that kind of intergenerational support. Also intergenerational learning. I mean, when I need to do something on the computer, who do I ask? One of my nephews, and they age from 12 to 16.
Yeah.
They know everything there is to know about technology, almost. They're digital natives.
Can you tell me how to do this? It's always followed with okay. This is how you do this. Okay.
But so many great opportunities can come from that intergenerational learning and communities. Hopefully more and more governments and organizations even will think about, you know, using older people to be mentors. Mm. They may not be on the payroll permanently, but imagine having a really skilled CEO who's now retired mentoring young new CEOs in a business. That would be fantastic. But some organizations take advantage of it, some not so much, but hopefully it's something we can all influence in the future.
Absolutely, I'm sure. Tell you what, it's been an hour and 22 minutes. Like, yes.
Wow, that went fast. Thank you. Yeah. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
No problem at all. I'm glad you're here, Nanette. I'm glad you're here. What I'll simply say is, yeah, can you tell people how they can find you and your fabulous organization?
Sure. So my email is Nanette, mm-hmm. Nanette, at whatnextology.com. And the website is www.whatnextology.com. So drop me an email. I love to have conversations with people. I'm getting pretty good at Zoom.
There you go. Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Picking up new skills, growing as an individual. Ah, perfect. What I'll do as well, I'll put everything in the description for your links. And yeah, we'll get some people over to you, hopefully. And yeah, we'll, you know what? I'm definitely going to get you back on in the future for sure.
I'd love that, Niwa. Thank you so much. It was great to meet you.
Pleasure's all mine. Oh, wunderbar. Anyway, I would like to say thank you, my friends, my life warriors, wherever you are in the world, for listening to the podcast up until this point. You are superb. You are wonderful. You are excellent. So stay well. Be excellent. Be cool. Be all the positive bees you can be in this world. And yes, we'll speak again. Peace. Ha ha. And...